Hi guys, I'm Karan Barar. I'm an actor, director, and producer here in LA, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, a conversation with actor, director, and producer, Karan Barar. Stay tuned. You know, in a sense, we're all, as humans, basically unfinished. We grow and develop each with a different pace, a different rhythm, and a different style. And hopefully we can be introspective, thoughtful, corrective, and even celebratory along the way. And speaking of celebrating, thank you so much for listening to this, for sharing it with your friends and family, for kindly reviewing and rating it, and for following us on social media at Dr. Abhay Dandekar. Now, it's seemingly rare through this evolution of our personal and professional identity that we find peace in enjoying the work in progress. But that's pretty much how I found actor, director, and producer Karan Barar. Karan is from Bothell near Seattle in Washington and was thrust into weaving that personal and professional discovery as an actor who moved to Los Angeles with his family when he was around 11 years old. He starred in a number of commercials and the Diary of a Wimpy Kid trilogy. But his steady place in American and global households during the 2010s was through his role as Ravi on the Disney Channel's hit Jessie and its spin-off Bunked, portraying the network's first ever series regular Indian character. Now, coinciding with this time frame of on-screen success, of course, was navigating through his own adolescent years into adulthood and finding peace with the many highs and lows of growing as a professional and as a person. He's as candid and open about the vulnerability of handling anxiety and depression as he is about the responsibility and challenge of South Asian representation. His thoughtful and heartfelt approach is also clearly evident in his service, whether as a celebrity ambassador for the Thirst Project or on the advisory board for the Cameron Boyce Foundation, named after his late best friend and Jessie co-star who succumbed to epilepsy. While he's had numerous noteworthy acting and voice roles in recent films and television projects, Karan's portfolio of work has also included leveraging his experience and talent as a director and a producer. Now, we recently caught up for a conversation about his ongoing discoveries as an actor, as a South Asian American, and as a person. But we started off by chatting about the behaviors he's encountered around pronouncing his name.
I think a bit more code switching than I thought. These spaces are really, you know, melting together. I'm seeing when I'm around any non South Asians, it's always like, oh, my name is Karan. Think of a car. You want to go inside of it. Car in. I literally have it in the bottom of my email signature. Yeah. I now put it in my contracts that I want, you know, the phonetic spelling of my name there, because I know people get really stressed out before they meet me. And they're worried that I might be deeply offended if they get it wrong. And when I, you know, if I go to South Asian events or anything in LA like that, I kind of have to do these the mental gymnastics of going, Karan, you can call me Karan.
Right.
And I think a really surreal moment for me was the first time I was guest starring on Mindy Kaling's show and my friend Josie Toda, her show, it was called Champions. And I was jumping on for an episode, and Geeta Patel, Ravi Patel's sister, who's a phenomenal director. She's extraordinary.
Who've been guests on this, by the way. Wonderful people.
Yo, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're amazing. And she was the first person to ever call me Karan on set.
Yeah.
And say that across a soundstage. So I would be, it's quite funny because sometimes Video Village, where the director is calling from or sending directions from, can be around the corner. It's not, nearby. And then your first AD might be white or something. I think the first AD was white. And she goes okay, Karan, can you, we're going to do it from here. And then the guy goes, who? And I was like, she was talking about me. She was saying my name.
Yeah.
In the proper pronunciation. It's been an interesting thing to navigate.
I was going to say, just getting into that, was that a surprise that it required kind of an aha moment of A, someone, you know, you knew who's brown, who's South Asian, calling you Gutern, and then it being kind of like, well, yeah, that's really the way, you know, I want it to be called. And hopefully it becomes less of like a separate lane and kind of more just like, well, that's what everyone calls me. I've gone through that myself with my name. I mean, Abhay is not the easiest name for anyone to say. So it's been through every kind of iteration. But, you know, was that a pleasant sort of surprise as it seemed like that started to merge in with how you, you know, kind of wanted yourself to be known as?
I actually think it ignited a lot of conversation and controversy inside of me. Like, I felt very polarized by it. I think I'd spent so much of my life trying to acclimate and this might be a very intense term, but to whitewash myself. Sure. Like, I was, you know, I grew up in a very, as your wife knows, Mill Creek and Bothell are very white neighborhoods.
Yeah.
In Seattle and Washington. And so for me, it's like, it's not that I had these words, but I knew that I was othered. Like, I knew, like, I remember crisply that moment of my first grade teacher calling me over, and there was another Indian kid being admitted into the class. Yeah. And they're like, oh, and we have Karin. And Karin, see? Like, you know, and, like, I was aware of my otherness. I was aware of the lack of people who look like me in a room. And so for me, it was like, okay, well, just acclimate. Like, I don't want to other myself in any way. And for my name, it's just, it's been such a back and forth, especially with my family, because I mean, it's the name that, like, my mom had, when I asked for the story about how she settled on Gutern, she just had so much conviction about it. She was like, I really like the name. I always wanted to have that name for a son. And when we had you, it was just like, there was, you know, I don't even think my father was a part of the choice. It was very much like she was
just sort of instinctive.
Yeah. And I think, like, the really challenging parts weren't explaining my name or trying to figure out how people should say my name, but was when people wouldn't say my name. Yeah. You know, after we'd do a live audience on Jesse, we would do a meet and greet with the entire audience that came through.
Right.
And we would kind of all be lined up in chairs. So we were like 5 feet away from each other. And, you know, people would go from like one thing to another, like down a line meeting all of us.
Right.
And it was so, it really hurt when I would like hear people be like, oh my God, Cameron, like we love your thing. Like we love you. And then they'd meet me and they'd be like, oh my God, Ravi, we love you.
Right.
And then they would go over and they'd be like, Peyton, we love you. And and obviously, like, I know now and I have the, you know, the perspective to be like, oh, they were intimidated to say my name. They were intimidated to like leave a bad impression and offend me. Like, I understand what that, but I was kind of just like, I'd struggled so much with like people not wanting to say my name and feeling kind of this invisibility because of it.
Yeah.
And I know like one of the toughest conversations I've had to have is with my mom, and we were in the car and she was just like, do you want to change your name? Yeah. And I was like, immediately had this knee-jerk reaction. I was like, no. I was like, this is the name you gave me. Like, this is the name I want to live with. And this is the name I want to continue my life with. And after that, it was just like, okay, how do I want to like navigate these spaces? And until this day, it takes a lot out of me to like be like, okay, like, Gutern, just explain your name to someone. You know, I was just on the phone 10 minutes ago. And they were like, so Karin, we just sent you over those papers and da-da-da.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, man, I just want to say, like, my name is actually Karin. This is the pronunciation.
Yeah.
And that's really hard for me because I just don't I feel like I'm inconveniencing people. I feel like I'm taking up too much space. And as I'm sure you can relate to, kind of summing up this very long tangent, is that I think there's a lot of South Asian mentality, which is don't take up space, keep your head down, do really well, cash the check, and keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to make enemies and be abrasive. And like, you want to be as appealing and appeasing in these majority white spaces as possible.
And it's so funny you say that, because I think you're totally right in that no one wants to take up space in a way that's obtrusive to somebody else. And we want to make people feel happy. And yet a growth part for sure is to ensure our own happiness and joy, and it shouldn't come at sort of expense.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with actor, director, and producer Gutern Brar. Stay tuned. conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France, and you are listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation with actor Karan Brar as he recalls some of his first experiences landing in Hollywood.
I think like when I was auditioning for Jesse, they had called us down for a callback of some sorts. And so my mom was just like, had booked us a hotel like at a whim. Cause I think they gave us like some kind of budget. They were like, hey, like, and she like, you know, in our heads in Seattle, we're like, oh, Hollywood's a nice area, right? Like Hollywood's like gotta be gorgeous. And so we like got this motel in Hollywood, and me and my dad were just like, so just like thrown off with just like, you know, this TV version not matching our reality of Hollywood.
Oh yeah.
And then also they were like, oh, it's cheaper to live on this side of the hill. Like my family was like, great, we'll do that. And all my friends lived in the Valley. So it's just like, till this day, I'm very loyal to it. But eventually I've got to start exploring other neighborhoods of Los Angeles.
You know, and then the other thing I was going to ask, I know that at least I've seen on social media, you're a Disney enthusiast. Do you have a particular favorite Disneyland attraction or ride?
I think that's so funny because, you know, me and my friends, you'd think that after working for Disney for so long, we would be like, oh no, we're good. It's kind of like, I'm sure it's like, you don't want to talk about medicine right when you come home, you know, it's just like, let me let my brain turn off.
Yeah.
But me and my friends actually love Disneyland. We love Disney World. We're like, we're here for the trips. You know, for me, I think it's, I think they've changed it to, in California Adventure, the Incredicoaster. And I always love that because, you know, like, oddly, my mom loves roller coasters. She's like a roller coaster junkie now.
Yeah.
And she loves that ride. And I think it's just the most bizarre thing. Because, you know, when you meet my mom, she's just like this very like quiet, like small, you know, like somewhat timid South Asian woman.
But she brings it when it comes to her roller coaster game.
Yeah, she's like very intense. She was, I think last time we were there as a family, she's like, let's go again. And I was like, whoa, Jess, like, let's calm down. Like,
right. Hold it in. Let me ask you, we were just talking about, you know, our names and your name and the idea of what it's meant, you know, aside from our names, right? I mean, our names are so much of a signature of who we are, its identity and, you know, how we feel when someone calls us and, you know, how we feel when people who we have deep relationships, you know, call us by the name. Other than your name, though, what are some of the things, perhaps the elements of your life that are truly, you know, right now, very Indian or very Punjabi or very South Asian?
Ooh, I think it's a really good question. I think for me, I'm actually trying to consciously redevelop my relationship with my culture again.
Yeah.
I think I, for the longest time, I've had a lot of resentments, towards my heritage and my culture, just because of some of the beliefs and some of like the behaviors that I see within like the community and, or also just like a deep desire to acclimate. And I think for me, it's actually been one through like friends, you know, meeting new people that happen to also be South Asian, connecting with my South Asian community within the entertainment industry, not feeling so like segregated and separated.
Yeah.
And actually like making meaningful connections with them that extends past business and is just, you know, friends. I'm telling myself like, I don't have to meet my culture like all at once. Like it doesn't have to all just hit me like a freight train and be like, great, I need to accept and embrace all of it. And I think like the parts of me that I've, like a great entry point outside of these like beautiful friendships that I have with other people that are South Asian has been food. You know, I grew up with my mom cooking only Indian meals. And it was like a weird special thing if we were like, you know what, let's do lasagna tonight. Like it was, especially now that I'm moved out and I'm on my own, you know, that's something that I like, you know, crave at times, yeah. Especially if I'm on a shoot and I'm like, okay, I need some flavor.
Yeah.
I like forget how spoiled I was in that capacity.
You know, with that sort of food experience and kind of the definition, I'm curious if you remember what your first day on set was like. And if you have kind of like that thought memory of, you know, obviously contrasting it to what your life is like now, but on that first day when everything was new, you're sort of a tourist there and, you know, you have your home life and then all of a sudden you're thrust into this professional life. Do you remember what that first day was like?
You know, I can't tell you the exact first day. I think I remember like one of the more like important first days. So I was shooting this, my first movie, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And it was like my first real project outside of commercials. And I played this character, Chirag Gupta. And I had this kind of like monologue in you know, in one of the scenes. And I had I'd been prepping this and spent a lot of time on this. And the funny thing was like, I don't think any of us were really nervous. You know, we were all kids. We were maybe 9 or 10 years old at best. And for me, it was the fact that like, I just was so not cognizant of things, you know? I knew that the camera was there. I wasn't like aware of the camera at all times. Like I was.
Was there a sort of a freedom with that?
Yeah, there was like a freedom. There's also this like, there's this lax feeling, like this relaxedness, because you were like, oh, I'm just with my friends and this is a really cool thing and yeah. I love this book series and this is really right. fun. Like you don't like. You
it's
don't,
almost like the being on a playground.
Yeah, and you don't really understand like the weight of things. And you know, kids shouldn't be like, they're kids, like, and let them enjoy their life.
Yeah.
But you forget like, and when we were shooting Diary of the Wimpy Kid, like I believe it was shot on film. Yeah. And you know, you forget like, film gets burnt through. Film gets used.
Yeah.
Like there's a physical thing that gets used up and thrown away when you mess it up. Like now in digital, it feels more like, okay, it's in a memory card. Like they can just like press delete, and like whatever, we'll get more.
Right.
We'll have storage again.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. And so, yeah, that's like the thing. And as I've spent more time, more than a decade in this industry, I'm just so cognizant of all the moving pieces and wheels of a production.
Yeah.
And now I consciously, especially if I'm doing film, I have to shut that part of my brain off. So much so that I become an inconvenience to the camera guys at times, because I want to be able to work with them and I want to be like look out for them and be like, oh, hey, like this, okay, this person right. needs their light or they, whatever it is. And sometimes I have to just be like, I'm sorry. Like I will get too in my head when I start breaking the fourth wall and I'm like, oh, the camera is there and whatnot. Like I just have to focus on the other person that's in this scene.
Sure.
And I can't think about anything else. So in a weird way, it feels like this Pandora's box that gets open and closed.
Are there times where you're working now and you have to kind of, in some ways, harken back to that those first times on the set and recapture some of that kind of naked freedom? And other times when it's just kind of like, no, I really can't just burn through stuff. I really need to be aware and a little bit more sensitive to the needs on there. Is that a balance that you've had to kind of strike and kind of relearn?
Yeah, it's been an incredibly challenging. It's been incredibly challenging to navigate that tightrope.
Yeah.
Because different projects require a different amount of attention and yep. expertise. So when I'm working on a multicam sitcom, in all honesty, it is a very technical craft, you know?
Yeah.
I am like trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, these are the jokes. This is how I hit the joke. And this is where it needs to land. Here are the very precise, there is a tango to the move. Like I'm not like moving across the stage. Like I'm not crossing because I just feel like it. And like, I'm just like really like emotionally present. It's because it's like, okay, I can feel the, like right now the cameras have been sitting in the same spot for a second. My director needs me to cross over there to switch it up and da da da. Or like, especially when I'm, the best way to describe it is when I'm in another scene and maybe I'm in a scene with a younger, maybe less experienced actor in a sitcom, I'm thinking about, you know, I have all my reactions bookmarked. So it's like, I know I'm supposed to be super sad here, da-da-da. It's not like I'm waiting to genuinely, authentically feel things.
Yeah.
And then I'm going, okay, they're like, okay, they said the wrong word for the setup of my joke, so I need to adjust my punchline to land that. Oh, wait, they're missing their light, so I need to go a little bit upstage so they can match that. Yeah. And oh, also I need to write that email later about this thing. So like my right. head's in five different places at once.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. It feels very exciting. You know, you're like juggling all these different things and it, there's like a rush to it. And then when I'm working on something, like, for example, I worked on this film Stargirl for Disney
yeah.
Plus.
Yeah.
And that is very much shot as like an independent film. It's very character driven. It's mm-hmm. very much like, even though it's a kid's film, it's or a young adult film, it's very much made to feel
kind of like more of an indie film.
Yeah, just focused on the relationships.
Yeah.
And with that, you know, Bryce, who was our cinematographer, and he was also, you know, our camera operator. And what was great is he would just be like kind of roaming around with his camera a little bit. And yeah. I would actively like have to tell him and the camera guys, I'd be like, okay, guys, I'm going to do my best to remember this. But like right now, all I'm focusing on is like, and I know this sounds cheesy, but being like present with myself
sure.
and, you know, just focusing on the other actor and trying to feel really connected in the scene. Because when I'm thinking about all the technical parts, I'm just in another.
Right.
You know, I'm miles away from where I need to be.
Well, and let me ask you, I mean, like, has been acting and being in this sort of professional environment for the past decade, do you think that the overall kind of calculus of this is that it's made you a more complete person? Has it unmasked or unearthed some surprising qualities and skills that that you never knew you had? And then perhaps has it also unmasked or unearthed, you know, some real pain and vulnerabilities and things about you that you also didn't know that you had?
I think it's both. I was just talking to my agent about this, and she was telling me, she's like, you know, when people come up to them about acting, she will say, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah.
Because it is, if there's anything else you want to do, you should do it, because the highs are very high and the lows are very, very low.
Sure.
And I think for me, it's been interesting to be in an industry, in a professional industry that is so public facing. Mm. And I don't really have the time in the public eye, not time, but like the space to be like, oh, hi, I'm a teenager and I'm really confused about who I am. And I'm like trying to figure that out as I go.
Yeah.
You know, people like want to see kind of like they want something that's clear and crisp. They want a strong sense of identity when right. they're looking at an actor, a singer, whoever it is in the entertainment industry. And so for me, instead of being in this natural flow of life of being like, oh, I think I don't like this part of me anymore and I'm going to let go of it and I'm yeah. going to, or I really like this thing, I want to adopt this. It's always, I keep trying to reach an end point with who I am.
Sure.
And being like, great, this is the final incarnation of Karin. And this is, I've figured it out and I'm, the functions of who I am is optimized. And I can go on my life like this for the rest of my life.
Right.
And that's not what life is, you know? Like yeah. it's constantly this shedding and this growing.
Yeah.
And accessing, like being able to connect with that and not panic and be like, oh, I have to be okay with the fact that there will never be an endpoint for who I am. And yeah, there's been, this industry has brought out some very challenging conversations, not only with myself, but like with my loved ones.
Yeah.
It's also like brought out some incredibly intense insecurities. I think it's also brought in some of like the biggest highs and sense of purpose and yeah. sense of confidence for me. And all of those things, as intense of like emotions as they are, I'm trying to embrace them.
Yeah.
Because they have led to so much growth that I've always been appreciative of and always like savored. And I think that like, I love the challenge of it. I love how yeah. much it challenges me. I think, you know, people will always ask me like, oh, do you want, cause I direct as well. And they're like, oh, do you want to move to directing?
Right.
And I was like, in all honesty, like I really like directing. I like directing, you know, multicam sitcoms. I think they're really fun. But I get it. Like, it's technical and it makes sense to me and whatnot. But like, acting is so challenging and it's yeah. so like this, it's, you know, it's so volatile. You know, you can show up one day and it doesn't work. And some days it does. And you didn't think it was going to work.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I love about it is I'm perpetually being challenged in my career.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Karin Brar. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Cal Penn. I'm an actor, author, former public servant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Karan Brar.
You know, you bring up the idea of the visibility part, right? It's out in the open. Everyone is going through this, you know, seemingly going through this journey with you. And even as someone who's a person of color, a South Asian American, attempting to represent that also, or being put in a position where, you know, you've been representing it, or even someone who's been open and quite visible about depression, mental illness as well. At the same time, what's all this taught you about privacy and patience and restraint in some ways?
Yeah, I think privacy has been a really interesting thing that I've had to reckon with in my life. I think when I was a teenager, as much as like I was being seen by like millions of people on a continuous basis, by the youth of America.
Right.
And in my private life, like I so badly didn't want to be seen because I didn't know who I was and I was so insecure and that I was like, literally, I never wore any color. Like I wore all black and like, I was just like, I rarely, if I like left the house to do something, like I would be, you know, just like running in, grabbing what I need and like running out. Like I was not like, I was so uncomfortable with who I was. And I think like in time as I'm like figuring myself out and being okay with being perceived, I also think like what's been a really like a guiding light for me is that I'm a big researcher.
Yeah.
And I love to like, if I'm about to make a decision, it's like, I have my like people who I really trust and their advice. And I'll be like, okay, what do you think about this? I'll do my like research online. I want to take in as much information as I can to make the most informed choice. And for me, privacy in this industry, I fully respect the people that are like, hey, I want to keep this part of my life private. And like, that's its own thing. And you know, what I provide publicly is my craft and that's great. And you can consume that. But for me, of course, there's parts of my privacy that I savor, which is like, I don't want someone knocking on my front door and like wanting to be like, hey, are you that guy, like, let's talk. I'd be like, no, this is weird. But for me, it's like I'm not afraid to be open and vulnerable with people, because like if there's something from my story that can make someone feel a little bit more informed about theirs or related to about theirs, or it's just like,
sure,
there's just it's nice, there's a comfort in knowing that someone else has made some kind of jump in any capacity, you know, metaphorically, like whether it be a career, whether it be an experience, an emotion or whatnot, and they've survived and gone to the other end.
Right.
Like that is a very comforting thought in itself. And so for me, it's like, I don't get like nourishment out of a deep layer of privacy.
Sure.
Like that doesn't provide anything for me. And I have to be actively like pushing away any sense of shame I have by being like, oh, I'm okay with people knowing about me and my experiences. And even with my experiences with mental health, like I like don't want that to be a thing that people feel. Yeah, that's not something I need to like keep private, you know?
You know, with that, like, you know, just the craft itself, right? It's so much about sharing and expression and performance. And yet in that same spirit of being comfortable and embracing the elements and that dance between performance and showcase and privacy and respecting boundaries and developing your relationships, you know, through that. I'm curious whether succeeding in the performance realm has also made you in some ways a better listener and able to be introspective about the research and taking it all in and almost synthesizing what you listen to.
Yeah, I think there's like a natural crash and burn that should happen with success. I think, you know, when we're trying to climb some kind of you know, metaphorical mountain with our careers or these like things, you know, we want to reach that crescendo where we're like, oh, great. I've got it figured out. It is smooth sailing from here.
Right.
And I think it's admitting that like, oh, I don't have this figured out and I won't. And like, there as like two things can exist at once. Like I can know a lot when I step into a room and I can be a successful person.
Right.
And I can also still like meet people who might be younger than me, less experienced than me, or like significantly older than me that I maybe don't respect. And like, they might bring some like knowledge to the table that like I could have never even come to on my own. And I like think that's like the biggest part of like success is humility.
And is that a product of learning to listen that much more, or you know, develops that kind of humility cachet, if you will?
Yeah, I think like, you know, you're a good listener when you're not afraid to hear someone call you on your shit.
Yeah.
And like really sit with it. And I don't mean like someone in like in passing, like making a remark. I mean like someone you love and you care about, like sitting down with you and being like, hey, this, what you did was not okay. Or like, hey, like this, you're like, I don't think you are reaching your full potential. I think like that's what really listening is. Cause yeah, you can like sit there and you can like, you know, give those endearing eyes and like nod and be like, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. I'm really taking this in. But like true listening is like letting something impact you and being willing to be like vulnerable with that information and not be invincible throughout a conversation. And I think like I have had to really teach myself that with my friendships and being okay to like sit with my friends and, you know, let them tell me the hard truth and be willing to listen to it and sit with it and accept it so I can get to the next thing.
I'm curious if that same skill that is ongoing and developing and one that you're embracing more and even sort of integrating into your performances and your acting, has that been actually valuable in developing skills as a director? Is there a different empathy that you maybe have to have as a director that is, you know, kind of a sidecar skill from acting?
Yeah, I think the biggest part of directing is code switching. You need to be a different person in different scenarios. And yes, the key component of the job truly is, in my opinion, choosing A or B. You know, a lot of people, a lot of specialists will come up to you and be like, hey, like, what cup do you want? Do you want the white cup or do you want the black cup? And you're like, okay, like that one or whatever. And when it comes to directing, it's, I'm speaking a different language when I'm talking to my first AD and my line producer. And they're like, hey, Karin, do you want to pay for this camera crane or do we want to like not do it for this episode? I'm speaking a specific language there. And then when I'm working with my actors, I really try to pay attention to what do they need for their, it's so surprising. Like sometimes I'll meet super young actors and you'll be so surprised. Sometimes they just want information cut and dry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Mallory James Mahoney is a phenomenal actress that I worked with. And, you know, she very much played this cutesy character, Destiny, who's like very bubbly and whatnot. And I think people project this assumption that like she really needs, you know, things told to her very gently, but she's actually, you know, she's tough. And she,
yeah.
I remember when I was first directing her, I understood the language that she spoke. And I was like, hey, Mallory, like, here's what we need to do. You need to hit this word and we need to paste this line up. And she's like, great, cool. Thank you so much. Like that feel, we had such a great working relationship because she felt understood and she didn't feel like she needed to navigate this mistranslation. And like, there's some actors I know who are like, as much as I want to turn to them and be like, it's just a joke. Like you just have to say the joke. Like it's not that big of a deal. I also know that they need connective tissue. They need the mental connective tissue. And then I go, you know what? I actually think your character is saying this because of X, Y, and Z. And I think that this is what it is. And I help them build that. And I code switch between the actors and between the people I'm working with to understand, like, to help them address the needs.
And it seems like, you know, that idea of code switching, of understanding and having that empathic tone and almost the vision to be able to now work with an actor, with your ADs, with the rest of the staff. It seems like it's also a form of leadership development that happens sort of naturally on the set. I want to kind of translate that to another element of your life. And that has been in those skills that you've developed and in the kind of experiences that you've had personally now. You know, what is being part of the Cameron Boyce Foundation and taking all that backdrop in and keeping all of that in mind, what is being part of that foundation actually taught you about being a leader?
I think for me, we have a very female-driven team. And, you know, there were so many important and impactful women in Cameron's life who composed the foundation. And I think a really big learning experience for me has been kind of addressing this like sexism within me and understanding how I'm inherent, like the parts of me that are inherently sexist, because I think for me, as a man, we feel this sense of like, we might not name it, but this like birthright to leadership and being like, great, well, I'll just man the ship and I'll do this and I need to say my ideas and I know what I'm thinking and whatnot. And sometimes what real leadership looks like, it looks like listening and amplifying and making space for someone else and understanding and like hearing like, hey, like sometimes the leader isn't the smartest person in the room. The leader is someone who knows how to orchestrate the conversation and keep it going and let other people take the lead and going like, oh, hey, actually, I think they mentioned something. I think we should go back to what they just said. Or like, oh, you know, what's so funny. They actually mentioned that idea earlier. And they said that idea earlier. It's you know, that's been such a big part of the foundation for me behind the scenes is learning that aspect of leadership, because leadership isn't one-dimensional. It doesn't look like just, you know, sitting in a chair and shouting orders. It means like addressing the needs of that situation, of that community, of that experience, of that project.
Well, and especially for something that's so profoundly personal, you know, for you, both in your personal life, your professional life. I mean, there's so many kind of tentacles to all of those things.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back to our conversation with actor, director, and producer, Karan Brar. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Priya Arora, and I'm an editor, writer, critic, and activist, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's now rejoin our conversation with Karan Brar.
And in that same kind of element of now being very self-aware of how to listen and amplify and orchestrate, I'm curious about now kind of resetting this notion of being an artist. And, you know, especially in 2023 as an artist and particularly a South Asian American artist and an artist of color, I'm so curious about sort of like engaging in the moment these days. As a South Asian American artist, as a performer, as an artist of color, what do you think you've had to unlearn in this role now?
I think for me, it's like, I've had to unlearn that my like criticisms, my like self-hatred and anything that I do is not going to yield better results. I think like for the longest time, I told myself the harder I am on myself, the better I'll be and the better like I'll perform. And that's not the answer. I think there is so much like beauty and growth and progress that can be found in being present and being patient and being gentle. And being gentle is not the same as being lazy. And I think it's so easy to feel that, you know, when you're easy on yourself, you're actually being lazy. And it's also like another thing is I really struggled with middle grounds, and I still do. I struggle with middle grounds so much, and I'm like, if I'm not being hard on myself, then I'm being lazy.
Yeah.
And trying to like bridge those gaps, and also understanding that like I exist in multiplicity, and like, yes, like I think there's times where you see actors and you're like, oh, they're the artsy type where they're just like,
sure,
you know, I can't even bother like answering emails. Like I just need to, you know, I just want to focus on the character and the script. And then sometimes you meet some that are really business savvy and they're like here for the check and they're like here to do their job and their brand deals. And I'm like, honestly, go for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing I've always struggled with is like, as someone who is, you know, I grew up in small businesses and being business savvy, but also like being an artist is like, I can be both things at different times. I can be this like person who can be in a professional setting, navigate a professional meeting, and like, and really have a good head on my shoulders. And I can also be like the actor on a set who's like forgetting about everything else and just like working it out with another actor and really trying to get lost into the moment.
And in some ways, does that take practice to give yourself the almost like agency to be able to say, yeah, it's fine to embrace both sides of that. And there is that big gray space in between. And it's actually kind of comforting to know that you're okay with being in that gray space.
Yeah, I think like it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of practice, and I'm still not great at it. But I think we assume we're going to get a lot of control when we have rules about life. And we go, oh, some people are like, life is chaos. It's just gray. And it's just all, you know, kind of this like, yeah, like chaos. And other people are like, it's very black and white. It's like, this is good. This is bad. Moving forward. And I think something that has given me a tremendous amount of relief and somewhat of control is accepting that the world is black, white, and gray at the exact same time. There are going to be things in my life that I see that I'm like, that is objectively bad and that is objectively good. And then I'm also going to see things that I'm like, it's gray. Like, depending on the way that I look at it, it's going to be a good thing or it's a bad thing and whatnot. And having that acceptance has allowed me to have like control and trust with myself as I navigate the world, and knowing that like, I'll be fine however I navigate it. And I will figure it out as things unravel.
Almost like enjoying the work in progress and, you know, sort of feeling like, hey, it's okay to have that work in progress sign up, and I'm cool with that.
And I also think having that work in progress sign for other people.
Yeah.
I think like it gives us so much control when we have labels on people and we put them in some kind of box and we go, great, this person is objectively bad. And it's like, I can sit here and I can be like, wow, that person said like a really awful thing to me and I'm really upset. And I can also go, but they're not a 2D person in my head. Sure. They're a 3D person living a full life and they're complicated and they're going through their own thing and they might have had a tough thing. And you know what? If they don't want to apologize about it, like that might be their own thing to reckon with. And that level of forcing myself, because I, growing up, I had super strong convictions about everything. I was very opinionated, very judgmental. And as I've gotten older, like I've had to really embrace this empathy of being like, if I want to see other people, like my source of anxiety can be like rooted back to like this feeling of, I think people aren't going to offer me grace.
Mm.
And the only way for me to feel a sense of grace and empathy and ease as I navigate this world is also being willing to provide it to other people.
First off, I mean, that's incredibly deep to, and you know, not, mature is not the right word. I would say just like really insightful, right? That like, yes, you have to have the licensure to allow other people to be a work in progress as well. And I saw an Instagram post that you did on your birthday. And I was intrigued by this, that you shared this one sort of thought that the answers you seek can be found where you least want to look. And what struck me about that was, I'm curious for you now. So where are you looking these days? And in fact, what questions are you asking yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm in a really transitional point in my life. I'm in my early 20s. I feel I'm constantly trying to hold myself back from not, you know, establishing a set course for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I think like the hard questions that I've really been having to ask myself is, I mean, honestly, like what's my role in this? What's my, you know, I think the biggest thing that I brought in from my teen years is honestly my sense of martyrdom and like me being like, oh, things are happening at me. And I'm not saying like things aren't happening to you and like that's not a valid thing, but also having to accept that, like, you know, okay, this is a tough pill to swallow, but like, Karin, here are the things that you did that might have contributed to the situation.
Yeah.
And regardless, like, let's assume you didn't even contribute to the situation and this thing just happened to you. Congrats, you're 24, you're an adult. Let's take some agency for our life and let's just like just pick up and keep moving forward. And sometimes like, and yeah, sure, that's an obvious truth, but that's sitting right there in front of me and I don't want to look at it. Like yeah. That's, and it's not under some like, you know, filing cabinet in the back of my head that I don't want to look at. It's just sitting there and I'm like, I want to make sure that no one else validates this and I don't validate it. So it's not true.
One last thought that I had, and that is for someone who may be watching some of your work for the first time, or that they're meeting you for the first time, when they exit that meeting, or they exit that conversation with you, or that experience with you, what do you hope they feel? And what do you want them to take away from that experience in either meeting you for the first time or even watching your work?
I think two separate things. I think when they watch my work, I just want people to leave it having a conversation in their head. I that's all I want is, you know, if it's a lighthearted comedy, it's like, great. Like, I want you to have a conversation about what parts you thought were funny and like what made you laugh, what didn't. And if it's like a drama, like, I'm curious, like, I'm excited to see what conversations happen outside of the movie theater experience and what it brings up for you and brings up for your loved ones. I think when it comes to meeting me, I think that I hope people can feel a sense of like honesty and a sense of like vulnerability. And I think as South Asians, we know the concept of a social contract too well. We know the idea of being like, hey, this is what you are, this is what you're expected to be, and this is what you need to do. And I hope people can enter and leave experiences with me not feeling a sense of obligation, but feeling a sense of like, you know, that they can just be like honest and present and vulnerable with me. Because I'd rather have an honest version of someone where we're bickering and arguing and at each other's throats than a version that feels very like contrived and orchestrated.
Almost like, you know, including them in your world, but not just as a spectator, but as a real participant.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what, you know, makes it like well worth it. Is like when I meet people and like I met someone recently and they're like, you know, your show Jesse, like I learned English watching it. And she was like, I came to the States, you know, speaking Spanish, and I would watch Jesse in the pastime just to like, you know, work on my English. And, you know, like that's really cool. Like I like to hear about those experiences. Yeah. Yeah, just as much as I'm okay with people being like, hey, can I just get a photo with you? And then they just like run off. It's like, you know, both are, as long as it's an authentic version of you, that's all I really care about.
Well, not just being authentic, but being real and vulnerable and someone who's perfecting their craft and also on a journey to perfect themselves. Karin, thank you so much for spending some time with us. And I hope we can visit with you again down the road.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. And I'll send you over some medical concerns that I have. Would love to get your feedback. I'll send you
anytime.
Thanks again, Karin. It's Mental Health Awareness Month in the U.S. for an issue that has global importance. So please visit the National Alliance on Mental Illness for more resources at NAMI or NAMI.org. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.